Welcome to Transforming Growth, presented by STEG, a CEPR consortium initiative. My name is Tim Phillips, and in the next 5 weeks, I'm going to be investigating some of the most important new research in economic development. Acting as my tour guides will be Joe Kaboski of Notre Dame. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Tim.
Joe, am I pronouncing Notre Dame correctly?
Well, you're probably pronouncing it better than we pronounce it. We pronounce it Notre Dame, but obviously it's a French word.
We'll stick with Notre Dame. And Doug Golling of the University of Oxford. I think I got that one right, Doug.
Hi, Tim.
Doug, you start us off here. In this first episode, we're going to be talking about the project that you run. And as we heard in the intro, it's called STEG. It's a little bit over a year old now. What does STEG stand for?
Well, it is a kind of unattractive acronym, but STEG stands for Structural Transformation and Economic Growth. And this is a research program that's been funded by the United Kingdom's Foreign, Commonwealth, and Development Office as part of the UK aid effort, initially funded by the Department for International Development before that was absorbed into FCDO.
And what is structural transformation? How does that relate to growth?
You know, the structural transformation refers to the changes in the structure of production in an economy that occur as countries develop. Classically, this is moving from, you know, an agricultural economy, moving production out of agriculture into manufacturing and services. But it's really a broader set of patterns, including moving from informal production to formal production, moving from home production to marketization, patterns of women's labor supply, moving to small-scale cottage industries to larger-scale production, and increased integration within the country and also outside of the country in terms of globalization. So it's really a broad set of all the changes that occur in the economy and production in particular as countries grow.
Doug, why do we need a project like STEG then?
For a long time, these big questions around how economies change in the course of growth have been a little bit pushed to the back burner in economic research. Although these seem in many ways like some of the most important questions, they're also difficult questions to answer, partly because they don't lend themselves well to kind of experimentation of the sort that's been at the forefront in development economics in the last 10 or 15 years, partly because they're just very difficult questions to get a grip on. And so I think the reason that the project is particularly valuable coming at this moment is that we have increasingly both tools and data, methodological tools and data coming from developing countries, which allow us to make progress on answering some of the questions around how these different dimensions of transformation unfold and what kinds of frictions or barriers or policy failures might get in the way of the transformations taking place. With serious theory and empirical evidence, we can start to get much better answers to these questions that are really quite fundamental for countries looking to develop.
Joe, these transformations are very long, aren't they? Some of them take decades. So is STEG going to last that long?
Well, we have an initial round of funding for 4 years with the possibility of expanding that to 8 years. So we're certainly not going to last decades in terms of this round of funding. But we're trying to use this funding to really grow the field, which I think the community of scholars that we're growing will last for decades. And hopefully we'll make enough progress on these policies, understanding the process, that understanding will last for much longer. And maybe it won't be as big of a problem in decades.
Yes. Now, if you go to the website, it is steg.cepr.org for anyone who's interested in going and looking at that. There is a lot of links to research, a lot of academic information. But is this just for academics?
No, I think that's a really important point, Tim, is although the research that STEG will support, and it's research that we will fund through competitive calls, just to be clear, the research will be done by academics and will be at a high academic standard. But the questions that we're trying to address are fundamentally policy questions. And we'll be very disappointed if the research doesn't speak to things that policymakers, particularly policymakers in low and middle income countries, care about. So we've spent time in the first year of the STEG program in conversation with people in government ministries, in think tanks, in international organizations in the global south, trying to get a sense of what they identify as being key issues for research. And our goal is to bridge the gap to some extent between the academic researchers and the policymakers, to answer questions that are of interest using state-of-the-art tools and techniques and the data that's available. But we're very much hoping and expected to deliver policy-relevant research that speaks to concerns that go beyond the world of academia.
So what does success look like there? What would we say will happen, hopefully, because STEG exists that otherwise might not have happened?
A lot of it is steering the type of research that gets done. So, for example, you get a lot more research on growth, but with applications to low-income countries and with policy relevance of that research for low-income countries, for policies. The other thing I've already touched on, which is bringing in a lot of young people to the scholarly community to do research, bringing in people from low-income countries, so growing the field and expanding it in terms of who has input.
As I mentioned, you're just over a year old. You could not have picked a more difficult year to get started on doing something like this. Seriously, while we have been in lockdown, everyone's attention's been on the pandemic. A lot of economists' attention have been on the pandemic as well. Have you still been able to make the progress that you wanted to make?
That's a great question, Tim. We started off our one face-to-face meeting of the STEG research team was on March 12th of 2020. It's the last meeting I've been in. Here we are just about a year later, and it's been a challenging year for sure, particularly because a big piece of what we're looking to do in the program is to build a research community. That's an awfully difficult thing to do at a time where community is fragmented and depersonalized and stuck in little rectangular boxes on the video platform of your choice. I think in spite of that, we've had some really interesting successes and some unexpected benefits from kicking off the program in a pandemic year. All of our activities that we had anticipated doing in person in the first year have been done online, and that's actually allowed us to tap into a much broader set of participants.
Ah, I see.
Our conferences, which might otherwise have been in person with a few dozen people, have been beamed out over the internet, and we've had participants from around the world. We've been able to pull in researchers who wouldn't have traveled easily to London. We've been able to pull in speakers and keynote speakers who might not have been able to participate. I think one of the really exciting initiatives that we've been able to do on this course, Joe and I and our colleague Richard Rogerson, but I'd say primarily Joe, took the lead in organizing a course for PhD students on key issues in macroeconomic development. We had initially expected that to be a course that might appeal to 30 or 40 doctoral students in universities. We have at the moment something like 1,300 people signed up for the course, 300 or 400 people sitting in regularly. Mm-hmm. And so this raises, I think, a really interesting observation about what it's possible to do when we accept that there are other forms of interaction besides face-to-face. So we've made progress. Some things have been harder. Some things have opened new doors and new possibilities for us.
You're listening to Transforming Growth. That is really encouraging. And in the next 4 episodes of this series of podcasts, you are going to be helping me to understand some of the issues here. And I'm going to be talking to some of the researchers who presented at your STEG conference this year. And hopefully, after that, we'll be able to understand some of the big issues in structural transformation here. Now, explain some of them to me. First of all, we're going to be talking about the impact of a reliable electricity supply on the ability of firms to be productive. Can we have, Joe, development without reliable electricity?
You know, I don't really think so in these days. I mean, electricity is needed for reliable factories, for office buildings, to really get work done. Even cars are moving to electricity these days to help urban pollution. So that's, you know, something in the future for low-income countries, of course. But, you know, the research shows that electrification frees up time in rural families fetching firewood. So it's not just cities. And kids need light to study at night. So I think electricity is pretty important for any country.
Now, second, we're going to be moving on to the process of industrialization. We'd already mentioned that today. Doug, do all countries develop according to the same process of industrialization as they go through their structural transformation?
I think this is one of the real puzzles that we're hoping to get at in this STEG program. There's been an assumption that the one pattern of development that exists is the one that starts in agriculture, moves through industrialization, and perhaps eventually into services. That's very much the pattern that the countries of the West or the North, the industrialized countries today, have gone through. And it's also a pattern that we've seen played out in the East Asian countries that have gone through rapid development in the past 50 or 60 years. The question is whether that's still an available pathway, still a relevant pathway, and whether it's the only pathway for today's poorest countries, some of which seem to be moving directly from agriculture into services. And what we'd like to do, I think, is to understand much better what determines those pathways, whether there are other pathways, whether that industrialization stage is essential or whether it's a historical artifact, perhaps, and how the role of industrialization varies depending on policy choices that different countries make.
After that, we're going to be talking about globalization. You really do deal with the big issues in STEG, don't you? Joe, if advanced economies pull back from globalization, because we're hearing a lot about the retreat from globalization, especially after the pandemic, how bad would that be for developing economies?
I think it'd be a big issue, that's for sure. You know, globalization enables countries to produce effectively without really having to reinvent the entire wheel. We saw that with the East Asian miracle economies. Countries can specialize in a certain step of the production chain, sell to foreign markets, import what they need to produce, and then expand from there as they adopt new technologies and techniques from abroad. But yet, you know, now the global climate and the economy has changed, and so we really need to understand this a bit more.
And finally, we're going to be talking about the massive wave of foreign direct investment that's been coming from Chinese firms into developing countries, and particularly one country in Africa. Doug, how important has FDI been in the last couple of decades for development?
Well, I think it's been hugely important. China has moved from being relatively disengaged with sub-Saharan Africa, for instance, to being a major investor, a major source of FDI moving into countries like Ethiopia. The importance of this investment is that it covers both firms, but also a very important role in providing infrastructure support and infrastructure investment. Trying to understand how much of this is commercially motivated, how much is geopolitically motivated, trying to disentangle the consequences of this investment as we see it flowing into countries like Ethiopia. It's a great case for looking at the power of foreign investment to drive growth, and also to asking questions about the complexities and the challenges of FDI as a source of growth. One thing we know is that FDI doesn't reach the entirety of these economies. For instance, it tends to be very concentrated in certain sectors and often in certain geographical spaces. Mm-hmm. And so understanding better how this FDI spreads out to generate effects across the national economy is something I think of real importance.
Well, we've got a lot to get through, but thank you for that introduction. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Tim.
Joe, thank you as well.
Thank you, Tim.
And Joe, you're going to be coming back next time when we talk about electricity, aren't you?
Yep, see you then.
You're listening to Transforming Growth. And none of you will want to miss any of our episodes, so subscribe to make sure you hear the whole series. Next week, we're kicking off, as I said, by discussing the importance of a reliable electricity supply, something that few of us in advanced economies ever have to think about. And we're going to be talking to Steffi Fried. She's from Arizona State and the San Francisco Fed. But for now, thanks for listening to Transforming Growth.